All right, so we're just starting the second side, and we were talking about the special assembly, special session of the General Assembly.
Yes.
On
first
the
emergency session. Special session.
Yes.
Yes.
And was it, it was at that session that a resolution for a ceasefire was called for?
Yes, yes. And for sending in the UN emergency force.
I see.
The UNEF.
Uh-huh.
That's, you know, the first clear case of a UN force being sent in on a peacekeeping mission.
Uh-huh.
There have been UN observers, such as
right,
Kashmir
right.
and so on, but uh-huh. not a force of, in some strength,
mm-hmm.
though not to fight, but to keep the peace.
Yeah.
That had never been done.
Right. As you say, there had been observers
yes.
in different cases, but this was the first time
yes.
the emergency
yes.
force.
Yes, yes.
And then soon thereafter, within a few days, the UNEF arrived in Port Said.
Yes, 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 yes. And that's and then well, the you know, the British said that they would not agree to leave and. Yield their positions to the Egyptians.
Mm-hmm.
But they finally were persuaded that, all right, you won't agree to that, but you will want to agree to going away and leaving, let the UNEF come in from the places you've left.
Okay.
You know?
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
And they agreed to that with a good deal of foot dragging. It didn't happen in just a few days. It took almost a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the British did drag their feet a great deal about that.
Right.
They were very, they felt very humiliated,
mm-hmm.
they said. And they looked that way. And mm-hmm. Selwyn Lloyd looked awfully dismayed.
Mm-hmm.
And, but anyway, they finally did remove their forces because the UNEF proposal was in effect made by Mike Pearson, the then Foreign Minister of Canada.
Yes, right.
You see? So that, of course, led to another crisis, because the UNEF came there, and it cost a lot of money, and the question was how to pay for that UNEF, and the Russians and French said they wouldn't contribute to it, and so on, and the Russians built up a huge debt, and this was partly settled much 20 years later when Arthur Goldberg was the permanent representative by some kind of a little trick which was performed.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, an interesting thing is the following, that I proposed in the General Assembly that we shouldn't send in a new force, we shouldn't create a new organization, but we should use the UNSO organization, United Nations Truth Supervision Organization, which is already in situ,
mm-hmm.
there, created after the 1948 war,
mm-hmm.
and created as a result of the armistice agreements which were negotiated by Ralph Bunche.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That we should use that machinery. And that all we need do would be to increase somewhat the personnel of UNSO,
mm-hmm.
to supervise the withdrawal of British and French, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Now that course would have been much cheaper. I wouldn't have created the financial crisis that the UNEF situation creates.
Why did they decide not to do that?
Well, because you see, You can't, don't you understand why not?
No.
Because that proposal had been made by Canada, by the Foreign Minister of Canada,
uh-huh.
and the Foreign Minister of Canada was supposed to be much more acceptable a person to the British than an Indian representative. Dulles accepted the proposal straight away as soon as it was made.
Uh-huh.
In a vote which took place, you'll find that my proposal received a larger number of votes than the Canadian proposal.
Mm.
I mean, my proposal was actually tabled as a resolution,
mm-hmm.
as a draft resolution, and it received more votes than the Canadian proposal,
mm-hmm.
but still, something which I don't quite understand until this very minute, except that the Canadian proposal was voted before mine, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, both on the same night.
Yeah.
But that came immediately before mine. They went ahead to implement the Canadian proposal, whereas the other proposal, simply to expand an existing organization by a little bit, would have been much more practical.
Mm-hmm.
Would have created far less trouble,
mm-hmm.
far fewer problems. But no, they went ahead with that proposal.
And avoided the massive expenses that were
yes.
incurred.
Yes. They could have avoided most of those offenses.
Yeah.
And also the non-payment by the Russians were contributors to UNSO, and they wouldn't have objected. No one would have objected.
So then the
things you see don't get done rationally. All that one can say is thank God they get done.
Yeah.
But. Even though they don't get done in the best way possible.
But that's why it's so interesting to do these interviews and get some of the background as to how things actually do happen.
Yeah. Well, when it comes down to it, things like prejudice and national prestige and so on become very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
Very important.
Mm-hmm.
All countries suffer from these. These rough edges.
Right.
You see?
Then after the UN emergency force landed in Port Said, the Israelis did withdraw their forces in that area. But they were reluctant to withdraw their forces from Aqaba and Sharm el-Sheikh. So what proceeded, how did the UN handle that situation with Israel?
Well, there informally the Egyptians said that we will not move our forces into certain areas and that kind of thing. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again that was, I say that's all. Of course that was a delicate kind of situation because the Egyptians national position was, why the devil shouldn't we move our forces into our own areas?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
How can you tell us not to do that?
Right.
So no one could tell them not to do it, but they had to signify simply by their actions that they weren't going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
By their actions. And they did so.
The Israelis, as I understand it, were concerned about freedom of passage through those areas. And,
yes. But they never got complete freedom of passage.
Mm.
It was very unfortunate. I mean, they should have, I agree.
Yeah.
But that didn't happen then.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
So the UN forces that were there still could not completely...
Well, they greatly improved the situation in the sense that now this is my recollection, which is hazy and probably faulty to some extent, that later the Israelis did get one or two ships to go through the Sharm the straits over there,
mm-hmm.
and nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
No one fired at them,
uh-huh.
etc.
Right.
But it was made. But they did that as a demonstration, really, rather than as showing that they were going to exercise the right to do so on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just backing up again, how were the British finally brought around to agreeing to some kind of resolution?
Well, again, you see, well, the fact is they were brought around by the power of the United States,
mm-hmm.
and by the fact that Canada was also very persistent in the whole movement and said, as we know, they had proposed the notion of an emergency force as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the pressure of North America, primarily of course the United States,
mm-hmm.
but Canada has a special kind of place in the British Commonwealth.
Right.
And so that's what they did.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they did.
What kind of role did the Soviet Union play in this? You've mentioned some parts of what, or what Soviets, if you recall, were there at the UN?
Well, Kuznetsov and Sobolev. Kuznetsov mostly.
Mm-hmm.
Gromyko partly.
Mm.
Yes. You know, the real answer to your question is that immediately on the heels, absolutely immediately on the heels of this situation at the end of October, was the Hungarian situation.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
That's
1956, yeah.
And at simply the next two days later, and the second United Nations emergency special session had to be convened to deal with that issue. And because the Russians vetoed the resolution in the Security Council on it. And that was convened, and the Russian focus was 99.9% on that issue and not on the Suez issue.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They really found themselves sort of pushed out of the center of the stage, or the stage really, of the Suez stage,
mm-hmm.
because of the Hungarian crisis which suddenly broke.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
Mm-hmm.
So the two got sort of mixed up together in that sense.
Did, in your opinion, did the crisis which finally happened, and somewhat at the creation of the French and the British, did they gain from that?
I mean, the French and British?
French and British, ultimately?
No, not in the least.
Not in the least?
No, not in the least. I mean, the effect of it is no longer there. Now what we are a long time away from it,
mm-hmm, right.
but they certainly didn't gain anything from it, not at all.
Yeah.
I think they would have gained, as I say, if at the first London conference of on the Suez Canal, they had accepted that proposal of a user's council,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and they clearly would have gained.
Right.
But they decided to reject that. So I think which I think was really very silly of them. Just plain silly.
Mm-hmm. And but in some cases, the Israelis gained something from the outcome.
In what way?
Well, as we were talking about, some increase in freedom of passage, and
well, I would say that.
And the UN troops now being in the Sinai.
I would say that yes. Said that was the major game. Though the Israelis refused to let the UN emergency force function on Israeli territory, so that it could function and did function only on Egyptian territory, they did gain from the presence of the UN forces there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Of course, later they were able to say, what gain was that? In 1967,
mm-hmm.
Nasser told Uthman to remove the emergency force, and he removed the emergency force. and the Egyptians were marching right up to our frontier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So of course that's another issue. I mean, I think personally that Uthman acted totally illegally in removing the force.
Really?
Yes, of course he had no right to remove the force. The force had not been sent there by the Secretary General, it had been sent there by the General Assembly.
Uh-huh.
Now, when the General Assembly takes action, the Secretary General has no right to countermand the action or to say, well, I'm going to now remove the force.
Mm.
Perfectly absurd. Ralph Bunche and others completely misled him, Uthman.
Mm. Mm.
And Brian Erfurt.
Mm-hmm.
They had no business to advise the Secretary General to do that. It was a completely illegal action on the part of the citizens.
Mm-hmm. What were their fears of leaving the forces there?
No, the point is this, that when Nasser asked for the removal of the forces, instead of saying, all right to remove the forces and whatever the fears were, etc. U Thant should have firmly said to him, to Nasir, but very politely, but firmly,
yeah.
Mr. President, I understand your position very well, etc., and your wishes must be complied with, but as you know, the force was sent there by the General Assembly, so I'd better convene an emergency special session of the General Assembly,
mm-hmm.
so they might decide to withdraw the force and what to do about the matter.
Mm-hmm.
That's what should have been done.
Yeah.
If that had been done in 1967, it's quite possible that there wouldn't have been a war.
Do you think the General Assembly would have supported retaining the forces there?
No, the General Assembly would have realized, would have said that from statements which were undoubtedly made by the Americans, the British, the French, and many others,
mm-hmm.
that this is a grave crisis,
mm-hmm.
and that this will lead to hostilities and so on. And therefore the crisis must be resolved, and so we call upon both parties to hold their hands,
mm-hmm.
to take no action now. Don't
right.
press for the removal of the force, don't let, and the General Assembly would probably request the Secretary General to negotiate with the Egyptians, or to send a negotiator to the Egyptians to try and resolve the issue.
Uh-huh. Before removing the forces.
That would have gained time, and
uh-huh.
Nasser might have then come to his senses,
uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Which he had temporarily lost,
uh-huh.
you see. And the whole thing could have been avoided.
Uh-huh. Had the forces been effective in terms of stopping the
much
periodic
more,
fighting
yes,
that
much
had been
more,
going,
much
the
more
raiding?
Than, yes, oh yes, oh yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yes, very much so. Very far fewer raids and so on took place.
Mm-hmm.
Not raids, there were no real raids, but even incursions very
right.
few,
yeah, yeah,
took place.
Yeah. Was there any objection to the UN force in terms of its discipline or
no,
behavior
no,
or any of
no,
that?
No, 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 no. Very well behaved and very careful. And see, all the arrangements for the deployment and utilization, and the limitations on the utilization of force, had been carefully worked out in consultation with the Egyptians,
mm-hmm.
see, by the UN Secretariat, well, by the UN. And in order for that to happen, the General Assembly appointed an advisory committee
mm-hmm.
to function with Hammarskjöld.
Mm-hmm.
There were seven people on that committee. I was one of them.
I see. This was at the time of the Suez Crisis
yes,
when
yes.
the forces
yes, yes,
were being
yes,
established.
Yes, yes, yes. So for the establishment of the forces, let's just let you into another peculiarity and unreality of situations. Hammarskjöld, who was a curious man in many ways, very, very able man, very intelligent, but also had some strange sort of mystical ideas. He said to us at the first meeting of this committee, he said, now the records, of course, verbatim records, would be kept at the meetings of the committee because they're very important issues, but these records are simply for your personal use, they're not for the use of your government.
Mm.
You mustn't convey these to your government, they're your personal use. Now, he must have been a completely naive person, and he had little experience of personal experience in diplomacy. If he really thought that we would keep those minutes to ourselves and not send them to our government. I mean, he was stupid. No, that was just impossible. Not only did we send them to our governments, but I gave a copy of those minutes every day to one of the three to send to Cairo. You see, just imagine.
Right, so that they would know exactly what was going on.
Yes, I thought that was absolutely essential.
What was his? What do you think was Hammarskjöld's motive in asking you not to report them to your government?
Oh, he thought that we. It would give us a freer hand.
Uh-huh.
in discussing these issues and arriving at conclusions and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he didn't know that every day Umar Lutfi and I every evening would discuss the meeting,
mm-hmm,
and come up with a joint agreement between the Egyptians and ourselves as to how to tackle the next day's meeting,
mm-hmm,
and what to say. Those meetings of that council, of that advisory committee, I tell you quite factually that they were truly mostly a dialogue between Dag Hammarskjöld and Arthur Lal. And with all the other six members sitting silent.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes Mike Pearson would say something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because we were the only delegation in close touch, the only members of the committee in close touch with the Egyptians.
Mm-hmm.
And they were the parties concerned. They were the party immediately concerned,
mm-hmm,
with the deployment of the force.
Yeah. What were some of the issues that the Egyptians were concerned about with the force coming in?
Well, to what extent would they actually use force? To what extent, what kind of arms would they carry? Would they bear?
Mm-hmm.
The Egyptians were very keen to get a low profile from the force,
right,
so that it didn't stick out and look like an occupation force.
Right.
That was the important thing.
Yeah.
Really,
yeah.
That was basically the most important thing.
Uh-huh.
And
were they concerned about what countries would be contributing to?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, they were.
So that, again, it wouldn't look like occupation.
Yes, yes, exactly. And at that time, the largest contingent was the Indian contingent.
Uh-huh.
See? On the ground, the largest contingent was the Indian contingent by far.
I see.
Hmm.
They felt the most comfortable with it.
Yes. Since then, things have changed in the world, as they always do. But
yes.
But that's what it was then.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Now,
so they were reassured, though, that...
they were reassured because, in any case, all the arrangements which were made in, through me in consultation with them.
Mm-hmm.
See? While Dag Hammarskjöld was naive enough to think that nothing like that is happening.
Uh-huh. And that that India was neutral and he could deal in a neutral way with you.
Well, I mean, neutral, I don't know what he thought we were, but he certainly didn't know that there were these close confabulations between Umar Lutfi and myself every day on these meetings.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Who else attended those committee meetings? What
countries?
Yes.
Canada, Colombia, Pakistan, India, Sri Lanka, Ceylon, as it was there.
Mm-hmm.
I forget the other two.
Mm-hmm. And were there others from the Secretariat?
They were so silent that I... the
right, it's hard to remember who they were.
The Secretariat contingent was Dag Hammarskjöld, mm-hmm, Ralph Bunche,
mm-hmm,
Brian Urquhart sitting right at the back, being very silent, and Claude de Mularia, the Frenchman,
mm-hmm,
who later was ambassador to the UN.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Did you have much contact with Ralph Bunche in these negotiations?
No, to tell you the truth, the contact which I had was with Dag Hammarskjöld.
Directly with Dag Hammarskjöld. And did you have much contact with Brian Urquhart either?
Well, he was not an operative factor in the situation at that stage.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Being British?
No, being very, very junior.
Oh, I see.
It was a very junior age.
Uh-huh.
No.
So he didn't play as much of a role?
No role at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, except absorbing what was going on, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Well, in looking back at the situation, were there any lessons that could be learned from how it was handled? What things were handled well and what things were actually not handled very well.
Well, I think that probably the most charitable view of the whole situation is that it did lead to a war, it led to a lot of suffering, etc. It was not as badly handled as it might have been.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for example, if the US had supported its allies, the situation would have, in the Middle East would have been much worse.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, that didn't happen.
Right.
As I've said to you before, the policing of the withdrawal of the British and French and Israelis could have been done much less expensively and with less fanfare by expanding UNSO.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that wasn't done.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you could say, was a mistake, and one could do these things better and so on. But I think one has to say again, in the same breath, that to expect things to be done perfectly in a crisis situation is very unrealistic.
Mm-hmm.
And that having regard to the fact that this was a crisis situation, by which I think one must define a crisis, and a crisis is a situation in which the feathers of any of the states closely involved in the situation are so ruffled,
mm-hmm.
that they are willing to go at the other party with all their force.
Right.
That's what a crisis is in these kinds of situations. Now, that was the situation here.
Mm-hmm.
So far as the British and French were concerned, it was like that. And so far as the Egyptians were concerned, it was like that too.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a crisis situation, and in such a situation, it's very difficult to have things going in an ideal way.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, unless there's something else you'd like to add, I think we've covered all the questions that I had prepared. So.
Mm. Well, no, then why should we add anything?
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. Well, I think it would be, and we were just discussing informally, your role in preparing the resolutions to encourage the French and British to leave Egypt after the ceasefire had been called for. So can you explain something about what your role was?
Immediately after the emergency force resolution was adopted, the first emergency special session and the ensuing regular 11th session of the General Assembly adopted resolution after resolution, urging the British, calling upon the British and French, urging them and Israelis to withdraw.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was no actual tangible movement of their forces out of that area,
yeah.
though the emergency force was being set up, etc. Those resolutions were introduced by me.
Should I stop?
Those 12, 15 or 20 resolutions were adopted in quick succession, urging the British, French and Israelis to withdraw their forces because there was no tangible movement by their forces out of the area.
Mm-hmm.
And none of these resolutions